did yesterday. It's on the council homepage, but I'll go over it quickly. We're going to do the HMS presentation from Tom Warren, and then we're going to go back to Rick Bellavance to do his HMS advisory panel report. He did the ICAT yesterday. And then we're going to do the skate committee report, EBFM, and then the other business, which includes revisiting the issue we discussed yesterday, the EVTR postponement issue. At that time, I will also ask if there's any additional other business. What we also are going to do is, prior to the start of the skate committee report, we will be honoring Dr. McKenzie for his service to the council. So with that, we will start with Tom Warren, NOAA Fisheries, HMS.
Thank you. I'm Tom Warren with the HMS Management Division. Can you see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'm based in Gloucester, and I'm going to provide a brief summary of Amendment 13, which is a suite of proposed measures that focus on the bluefin tuna fisheries. We published a proposed rule on May 21st. And my slides are not, there we go. So briefly, I'm going to go over why we're proposing these measures, the background, discuss briefly the proposed measures for the various sectors, and then the next steps. The reasons why we're proposing new regulations and why they're needed align with the three main focal areas of this proposed rule. The first being the pelagic longline fishery, the second, the purse seine fishery, and the third, the hand gear fisheries, rod and reel and harpoon. With respect to the longline fishery, there's been many suggestions made regarding the individual bluefin quota program, the IBQ program, from longline fishermen. And we also published a formal review of this catch share program. The purse seine fishery has been inactive and it's allocated a meaningful amount of quota. And meanwhile, there's other active fisheries that need bluefin quota. And then for the directed bluefin fisheries, the hand gear fisheries, there's been increased interest in how this fishery is allocated among various folks and geographic regions and time periods. And this comes in the context of increased landings and as well as recent high numbers of permit holders. We developed these, the formal regulatory process began in 2019. We released an issues and options document and received public comments on this. This document gave the public an indication of the direction we're headed and contained various concepts for bluefin tuna management. In 2019, we released a formal three-year review of the IBQ program with specific recommendations and a compilation of data. The HMS advisory panel has made suggestions for the bluefin fisheries, and then recently, we published a draft environmental impact statement, DEIS, that contained a suite of alternatives that would meet the objectives and analyze the socioeconomic and environmental impacts. The objectives of Amendment 13 briefly stated here are to evaluate and optimize the allocation of the bluefin quota among the categories, yet maintain flexibility of the regulations to account for the variable nature of bluefin fisheries and maintain fairness among the permit and quota categories. Continue to manage the longline fishery consistent with the IBQ program objectives. And that IBQ program was set up and first implemented in 2015. And then modify the pelagic longline fishery regulations and the IBQ program rules in response to recent trends. And notably, in the longline fishery, there's a trend of declining effort and revenue for target species. So switching to the proposed measures, this measure is a relatively minor one, but would affect all quota categories. And it would modify a relatively minor step in the annual quota allocation procedure. And instead of subtracting a fixed amount in weight from each category and adding 68 metric tons to the long line quota, it would simplify things and just make a one-step process and make minor adjustments to the quota category percentages. For the pelagic longline category specifically, we're proposing a change in how the IBQ shares are determined. Under current rules, 136 shareholders are allocated shares. The challenge with that has been up to a third of those defined shareholders that are fixed and do not change over time. Approximately a third of those are inactive vessels. And so in order to reduce the amount of shares and IBQ quota that are allocated to inactive vessels, we're proposing a more dynamic system that would allocate only to active vessels. And this would be determined on an annual basis based on the three previous years of specific landings. And these landings being swordfish, big eye, yellowfin, albacore, and skipjack tunas. Vessels would be assigned to one of four percentage shares based on the weight of their landings compared to the total fleets. Active vessels would be ranked based on the landings percentages, and four tiers would be formed, and there would be annually four different tiers and only four percentages allocated. And so, for example, based on 2015 to 2018 data, the percentages would be 2.09, 1.18, 0.64, and 0.12 shares. The other aspect of the allocation is each share is defined or designated as Gulf of Mexico and Atlantic. Gulf of Mexico shares can be used in either the Gulf of Mexico or Atlantic. However, Atlantic shares can only be used to account for bluefin caught in the Atlantic. And this is to prevent increases of effort and bluefin catch in the Gulf of Mexico. This would remain the same, but what would change is how these designations would be determined. And basically, similar to the more dynamic nature, these would be dynamic, and the designations would be based on the location of the fishing activity during those 3 years. So the total amount of designated shares, Gulf of Mexico or Atlantic, would change as the fishing location changes. But the total amount of Gulf of Mexico shares would be capped at 35%. Also, for the IBQ program, we're proposing capping the total amount of shares that can be held by an entity at 25% of the total. And although vessels cannot purchase shares independent of a permit, because vessels can purchase these limited access longline permits and the associated shares, it's possible to indirectly accrue more and more shares. And although this has not been a problem since 2015, nevertheless, we're proposing capping shares to preclude any future problem. With respect to reporting in the pelagic longline fishery and the IBQ program, dealers are currently required to enter a vessel PIN and provide dead discard information. But because the vessels have demonstrated a high level of compliance with reporting dead discards through their VMS, this would no longer be needed to be done by the dealers. We're proposing three changes to the electronic monitoring program. That's the program where vessels have video cameras on board and they're footage is audited for bluefin catch monitoring and compliance. Hard drives would need to be mailed in only every two trips instead of after every trip, which is the current rules. We're proposing authorization of installation of boom mounts for video cameras if necessary to obtain a clear view of the side of the vessel where the fish are moved. This wouldn't increase the number of cameras, but would just enable us to have some more extensive mounting equipment if necessary, and then paint a measuring a grid or put a measuring mat on deck to serve as a size reference that would aid in the sizing of fish, especially using artificial intelligence. We're proposing a cost recovery program for the IBQ program as required under Magnuson. Vessels would be required to pay a fee based on the amount of bluefin landed and average price at the dealer. Magnuson limits the total fees collected to a maximum of 3% of the ex-vessel value of bluefin landed. But because bluefin is a bycatch species, the total amount of recoverable fees is actually not very much. So we're proposing a flexible system whereby we would not necessarily recover, this slide isn't advancing, we wouldn't necessarily recover a fee because the total amount of recovered fees may not even be enough to cover the cost of administering this cost recovery program. So basically we would not, we would do an annual determination, but wouldn't charge fees if it didn't make economic sense, if the total amount of fees to be recovered is similar to the cost of implementing that program. A last aspect of the IBQ program is clarification of the rules whereby if a longline vessel uses green stick gear, it would be allowed one legal 73-inch bluefin caught incidentally per trip, but this bluefin would need to be accounted for using IBQ, reported through VMS, and the vessel would need to abide by the other IBQ program requirements. Switching gears to the purse seine fishery, the purse seine fishery has been largely inactive for a decade and a half and totally inactive since 2015. This limited access fishery was created in 1982, and there were five vessels granted limited access permits, basically grandfathered into this fishery. And these five vessels at the time were financially dependent on this fishery. But this fishery was, the permits were non-transferable to new owners, and so there were no new entrants. And so due to the recent inactivity, we're proposing discontinuing this category because they are allocated a meaningful amount of quota. And we're proposing redistributing the quota proportionally to the directed categories, general, harpoon, angling, and reserve categories. And by proportionally, the redistribution would be proportional to their current proportion of bluefin quota that they receive. And so in a later slide, I'll be showing you the revised proposed percentages. We're proposing measures for the angling category, the recreational category. The recreational category focuses on bluefin of a size category 27 to 73 inches, which is a smaller category than the commercial size, which are greater than 73. But the angling category is allocated a relatively small amount of these larger 73-inch bluefin as an incidental category. And there are three geographic areas defined and three small quotas currently. So they're allowed a small amount of this incidentally caught large bluefin. What we're doing is proposing to divide the most northern geographic area into two areas and providing a little bit more quota for this area in order to provide some more opportunity for vessels that fish in the New England area. Frequently, the fishery closes, this northern area closes, the quota is used up before the bluefin even arrive in local waters. So this would provide a fix to that phenomenon. And here's the new proposed area. The two blue areas are currently comprised the northern area and would be split into two areas, the Gulf of Maine in dark blue and the Southern New England Trophy area in light blue. And as I said, given a little bit more quota. The harpoon category targets giant bluefin greater than 81 inches and are allowed a limited number of large medium bluefin greater than 73 inches. Currently, there's an unlimited number of giants that they can harvest per trip. The overall number is limited by a harpoon category quota, but the number of giants per day are unlimited. So what we're proposing is maintaining the current limit on the large medium, but putting an overall limit so that it might provide a little bit more opportunity to lengthen the season due to the fixed quota and maybe provide some more opportunity for more entrants. And lastly, for an administrative proposal, vessels currently are limited in the amount of time they can realize and make changes to their permit category. So for example, if a vessel wants to get a permit in the general category but makes a mistake and instead signs up for a recreational angling permit, they can make a change, but only within 45 days. So we're just proposing that we loosen up this rule so that vessels that make an error in their permit application can make a change, provided the vessel hasn't landed any bluefin. These are a comparison of the current bluefin quota percentages with the proposed. The current on the left, the thing to note on the left-hand pie chart is the per seine quota of 18.6%. Under the proposed measures, this slice of the pie, the per seine slice, would no longer exist. The other thing to note is all of the category quota percentages would increase compared to the current. The long line would not increase, but not as a result of being reallocated the per seine quota, but as a result of that mathematical change that I noted. So its percentage would go up slightly. And for those of you who don't like pie charts, this shows a different method of showing the proposed changes. The quota categories in the left-hand column, current percentages, the modifications from the mathematical change in the middle, and then the net proposed revisions in the right-hand column. So, for example, the general category would go from the current level of 47.1% of the quota up to 55.8%. So the next steps in the regulatory process, we're accepting public comments through July 20, and you can submit comments as shown here, or just give us a call if you need assistance in that process. Subsequent to the comment period, we'll be revising the draft environmental impact statement and forming a final environmental impact statement and publishing a final rule. And we hope to have any new measures implemented January 1, 2022. We've held one public hearing webinar on June 8th, and there are two more to come, one on July 8th and one on July 14th. And again, the links to those webinars are here and also on our website. So thank you very much. I know I ran through a lot of information pretty quickly, but I believe we have some time for questions now.
Great. Thank you very much for your presentation, Mr. Warren. I'm going to open up to questions from the council members first. Mr. Salerno, then Dr. Sissonwein, then Mr. Bellavance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some questions related to how you guys are looking at this, what I determine as a reallocation of the fishery or your new way of determining your allocation. So if I'm interpreting what you said, is that a fisherman can be inactive for, I assume, 3 years. He has 3 years to be inactive. He could still theoretically move his permit. But after that three-year period, the only way an inactive fisherman could become active again is he needs to buy a new permit. Is that correct?
Let me clarify. Every year, the allocation would be based on the three previous years of fishing activity. And so, for example, looking back 3 years, if a vessel was active anytime during those 3 years, in the subsequent fishing year, that vessel would be provided, would be a shareholder and allocated quota, provided the permits on a vessel. If a vessel was inactive during that 3 year period, it would not be allocated, it would not be a shareholder and allocated quota for the subsequent year, but it could lease quota and become active that year because it you need a minimum amount of quota to fish. But due to that fishing activity in the subsequent year, it would be an eligible shareholder because it was active in that particular year. And in the subsequent year, it would be in that rolling three-year window look back of activity.
Okay. I find that fascinating and quite interesting considering, you know, I work with the groundfish fishery and we have our allocation formulas, and I just find that interesting, and I thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Next up, Dr. Sissonwine.
Yes, thank you. Actually, my question was on basically the same issue, how this dynamic allocation would work. So Tom explained that, and like Dan, I find it quite interesting. I'm wondering whether there's been any consideration for how this sort of process might create some form of a race for the fish, which was, of course, exactly the reason that ITQ, or in this case, individual bluefin quota was put in place, and also how this dynamic process will influence the value of quota in the leasing market. I don't have any particular views one way or the other about these things, but I'm wondering if they've been analyzed in terms of preparation of this this particular amendment. The other comment I'd make is the elimination of the purse seine individual quota program is obviously overdue in a sense, since they've been inactive for so long. But it is worth noting that that particular individual quota program was almost certainly the first catch share program in the U.S. and one of the first in the world. And interestingly, I'm not aware of any other catch share program anywhere that's ever ended or been eliminated. So that's sort of an interesting historical note. Thank you.
Sure, I'll respond briefly. There's not a race to fish per se. Given that bluefin's a bycatch fishery, it doesn't really fit with some of the classic examples of catch-share fisheries and some of the dynamics. However, I acknowledge there are incentives, of course, related to how quota is allocated, and arguably there may be incentives to modify fishing behavior to game the system because allocation is related to fishing effort and landings. But that said, there's not a whole lot of incentives to game the system because a lot of vessels don't catch much or any bluefin. And then with respect to the leasing market, we do analyze the leasing market and realize that some of these allocation decisions are related to the leasing market and incentives. So I guess as a short answer, there's a lot of information in the DIS that speaks to some of these complex issues.
All right, next up, Mr. Bellavance, then Reed, then Popolato. Mr. Bellavance.
Thank you, Dr. Chairman. Thanks, Tom, for your presentation. Great job. I just have two questions. On your slide that you talked about reallocating the person quota, you had mentioned that the quota was divided amongst the directed fisheries and that the pelagic longline and the trap fisheries weren't afforded any allocation because they were incidental quota fisheries. And I was just curious if that's something that's in regulation or a past practice, or how would you describe how that's written down or figured out? And then after that, I have another question, a quick question.
Sure. It's a combination of regulation and past practice. It's I don't know if this definition per se that says it's a incidental fishery, but the regulations, the compilation of the regulations, treat it that way.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. And then my second question was relative to the additional trophy fish for the recreational fishery. And you had mentioned that the allocation for that slight increase would come from the large school or the small medium category. I was just looking at the performance of the fishery last year, and I noticed that that category exceeded their amount of fish by just a little bit. They were 113% of that amount. And yet the school fish, the smaller ones, were only 64% of the catch for that amount of fish allocated. So I was just curious what the rationale was for using a large school, small, medium to come up with a place to get those fish from and not the school.
The school is limited to, I believe it's 10% by ICAT. And so there's some severe limitations there. Part of the wiggle room, so to speak, by which we have the flexibility to draw from one size class and put in the other, so to speak, is the additional amount that would be obtained from the reallocation of person quota. That provides some wiggle room in the system. But I take your point that there's severe, limits to the amount of shuffling of size classes we can do, given the fixed amount of quota overall. And the fact that the school amount is limited to, I believe it's 10% by ICAT rules.
Okay, that was great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Reed, then Mr. Papalotto. I know Eric had sent me a text that he was having some audio problems. Why don't we hop ahead to Mr. Papalotto? I know, like I said, Eric texted me saying he's had a few issues. Mr. Papalotto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you doing, John?
Good. Two quick questions, if I might. I noticed in your presentation some adjustments to the EM protocols and program in this FMP. Just curious, is this, two questions here. When did EM become active in the fishery? And is this the first time that recommended changes are in the offing?
It became active in June 2015. The amendment that implemented it became effective in January. But we, had a 6-month implementation period. But so vessels were actually required to go live with their systems in mid 2015. These are the first proposed changes. We did make one minor change to the program a few years ago, pursuant to an ICAT recommendation, which was we started monitoring the short fin Mako catch in addition to the bluefin compliance aspect of the bluefin auditing. But yes, the first proposed changes.
So about 5 years of using EM in the fishery, and sounds like the service is comfortable now looking at the logbooks from the vessels. Is that Is that a way of looking at this? Self-reporting?
It's right. I mean, there's been pretty good correspondence between the VMS data and the EM data. You know, we're continuing to look at it, and the program has been useful in terms of corroborating those self-reported bluefin catch information. The focus is the VMS data because that's real-time data.
Okay, thank you. One last question, Mr. Chair, if I might.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Tom, also in your presentation, you referenced a 25% cap. Two questions surrounding that. One, is that a cap on ownership or ownership and lease or sort of control? And second, how did you arrive at a 25% cap? That seems a high number.
We arrived at that number basically based in part on the highest amount of ownership to date. The exact percentage escapes me. It may be approximately 8 to 10% of shares, but it's a cap on ownership. Not on leasing or use per se, so it does provide that flexibility, and we wanted to cap it at a level that seemed reasonable to allow some measure of accumulation if you know certain efficiencies in the fishery or cooperatives are necessary because the fishery is. The effort is on the decline, and the revenue is declining. We want to make sure that we're not putting in place measures that would, you know, hamper its growth and profitability in the future. And so, a little bit of wiggle room to allow some more cooperative behavior is part of that thought process.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Sure,
Mr. Reed.
How about now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Warren. So I have a couple of questions. One is a general question. On slide 3, you noted about the recent high numbers of permit holders. I would think it's most likely in the hand gear category. What percentage of that gear type is actually meeting their annual reporting requirements?
I don't have a specific number that I had memorized, but I can get you that. The reporting requirements were beefed up in 2015, and the overall pattern is an increased compliance over time. It is not at 100%, but it's moving in the right direction. But we can get you that information. We tend to report that figure once or twice a year at our advisory panel meetings.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And I think that permit, there's like thousands of permit holders. That's why I'm asking. So my second question is, there is a bluefin box closure off of New Jersey in the late spring, early summer. What's the status of that box?
The closure is a pelagic longline June closure. And in 2019, that was modified into a monitoring area that allows access by longline vessels. But there is a cap on the amount of bluefin that can be caught there. And if they reach that cap, it would be closed. So it's a monitoring area that after 3 years, I believe, will evaluate the status of that. So it used to be a closed area, now it's a monitoring area.
Yeah, okay, I appreciate that answer. I mean, that box actually closes off almost the entire bank from about 40 degrees north on the beach in New Jersey all the way to the EEZ. So if that was open, there might be some better access to the bank than there is now. And my last comment is following Mr. Pappalardo's comment about the 25%, and that seems a little excessive to me. I know when there was a distant water fishery on the Grand Banks, those guys took advantage of that quite a bit, but it just seems 25% is a little excessive to me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Again, it's important to keep in mind that this is a bycatch fishery, and in contrast to a target species, there's not a lot of incentive to necessarily accumulate quota.
Back to Mr. Bellavance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had this in my HMS report to answer Eric Reed's question about the compliance for reporting, but I just thought I'd slide it in here, help come up a little bit because I had it right in front of me. So the general category fishery reports about 66% of the fish that they caught, and that is 65% of the fishermen that are active and have dealer landings. And then on the harpoon side, it's 92% of the fish are reported, and that is 78% of the active fishermen that are reporting dealer landings. And that overall average, when you add them up together, is about 69% of the fish that are caught are reported.
Great. Thanks for that. So we're going to go on to the
I have a follow-up on that, then. May I have a follow-up, Dr. Chairman?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And I'd also like to follow up.
So as far as, you know, fairness in categories, which you also mentioned, on the long line side, if you don't report, you can't renew your permit. Is that the same?
Looks like we lost them again. All right, why don't we go, Mr. Warren wanted to have a follow-up, so maybe you could.
Just a brief clarification. So the reporting we're talking about is for the general category in the harpoon, both commercial. And so we do get those fish reported by the dealer. The nub of the issue is then what discards reporting may not be reported. We do get the reports from the dealers of landed fish.
All right, thank you. One more hand up here, Terry Alexander.
Yeah, I think Eric was going to ask the same question as me, but I'll try to ask it and see. In the commercial fishery, if you don't report, you can't renew your permit. Are those rules the same in the bluefin fishery? I mean, if we're not reporting, if we're missing one trip report out of 180 for the year, they won't issue our permit. So is that the same rule for the bluefin fishery?
I don't believe it is. I don't think there's a rule for the general category, harpoon category, that says that. And frankly, I'd have to double check to determine whether that's a rule for the pelagic longline fishery also. You know, clearly there's enforcement compliance. You know, there's a compliance table and there's enforceable things that enforcement can do, but I don't believe it's hardwired with respect to permit rule.
All set, Terry?
Yeah, I think the Eric was going the same place I was, so I think so.
All right. Yeah, Eric, I sent him a text that we dropped him, just waiting for him to get back. Dr. Sissonwang.
Yes, thank you for allowing me a second question. Tom, you described the process that the agency is putting in this amendment concerning cost recovery in the context of the 3% limit that applies in IFQ-like fisheries, but basically indicated that the agency may or may not actually collect any fees in this. In terms of the electronic monitoring system that's in place for this fishery, what are the costs that are actually placed on the industry? Let me be clear. I'm very much a believer that there should be some level of cost recovery in fisheries, but I'm also interested in consistency or lack of consistency in the way these are handled around the countries. So can you give us a quick comment on what costs of the electronic monitoring program are actually borne by the industry in this case? Thank you.
Sure. The only costs borne by the industry are those associated with mailing the hard drives to our contractor at the end of each trip, or as proposed at the end of each, every other trip. The installation and service of the EM systems are free to the industry. The other non-monetary cost is, any change in slight change in how fish are handled is a burden borne by the vessel, but that's not monetary.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go out to the audience. If there's any questions from the audience. I see none. Back to the council. Thank you very much, Mr. Warren, for your presentation. Much appreciated.
You're welcome, and thanks for providing time on your agenda.
Great, thanks. Next up, we're going to go back to Rick Bellavance for his HMS advice.